Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
All right.
Yeah?
Good and all right between us.
Good.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
Doing okay.
Okay. Good, all right, and okay.
Okay, just fine. I came in here and I turned on the light and our famously one remaining bulb gave sort of a death rattle where it was like, oh,
it will soon
don't
be.
Don't know if I'm going to do it today.
Almost pitch black in here.
You're still down there. Dead Island 2, the spider.
House. Yes, House the Spider. Very excitingly, we're at Insomnia right now. We're recording this early on Wednesday. So if any of the things we talk about today are updated, then we'll correct it next week, maybe, if we remember. But just bear that in mind, that this podcast is recorded a few days before you're listening to it.
If you happen to be listening to a podcast on release day and also going to
a
conference, then find us.
We'll be walking around.
We'll be constantly moving. You'll never catch us.
We could take Billy.
We've taken Billy before, but he's getting a bit delicate
fragile
now, isn't he?
Yeah. I'm worried about
his hair might come off.
We're definitely going to lose one of his eyebrows on
the
show.
He's got a loose guitar as well.
Look at that receding hairline.
Well, don't get it out.
Sorry, I'm just going to adjust his eyebrow a bit because he looks. I want him to look a bit surprised. Ooh, me? Lose it? Oh, he's fallen.
That's what happens when you get old.
He's prone to falls now, unfortunately.
My granddad had a fall the other day, broke
his
hip. Yeah, he's had a partial hip replacement.
Oh, bloody hell.
He's all right.
Peter.
He said the food in hospital was horrible.
Okay, well, that was the worst bit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, bless him. Well, I hope he's doing the Dick Van Dyke, you know, the heel click.
Yeah, he will be, I'm
sure. Spry as anything. No, we're not sponsored by heel replacements. Heel? Hip replacements. We're not even at that point in the podcast yet.
No.
I was committing to it to then circle back and go, ah, got you. We're not talking about the sponsor yet.
But we are sponsored by.
But then I said heel instead of hip. Mm. And now I've just got it all confused in my brain.
Wow.
I've got the actual sponsor.
Yeah.
The real sponsor. Are you guys ready for this?
Yes.
So this is, no peeking.
I can't read it, it's so small.
Okay, me neither. This is a collaboration between British brand of hairstyling products for men, Brill Cream, the Team GB Olympic diving team, and developer Arrowhead, who have all pooled their resources to bring to your attention a brand new game mechanic, Gel Divers 2.
Right.
This is coming to Hell Divers 2.
Right.
And what you do, essentially, people love diving in that game, right? Throwing your body off cliffs and diving out the way of danger and the ragdoll physics. People love that.
Well.
They love it, yeah. So what they're going to do is build in each map a custom sort of tower that you can go up the stairs all the way to the top. And there's just a big pool of Brill Cream hair gel at the bottom.
Sticky.
And you can go splodge.
I would like to watch someone splodge into a pool of hair gel in terms of the goopy viscous splodge.
Yeah. Yes.
But then you would watch them drown.
Yeah.
They wouldn't come up again if they would.
Well, the exciting thing is that it's not just you.
But it's a video game, so it's fine.
It's not just you who's watching them drown. It's Tom Daly. British Olympic diver. He stands up there and he applauds you. Drown.
Is he a diver or a swimmer? I can't remember.
He's a diver. So he'll be up there clapping. Is he still on the Team GB team?
I think so.
I feel like he's been doing that for a long time.
No, surely he's retired now.
His last one might have been his last. I don't know.
He's an old man, 28. There's no way he'll ever dive again.
When you're an Olympian, you quit at like 28.
Well, I still see videos of him in pools and going diving.
I'm sure he's still in
swears
pools,
off water. I'll never touch water
no,
again.
I just
he
mean
might
that
not be an Olympian anymore.
He's like in a training pool, still jumping off
maybe.
Stuff.
Maybe. Not sure.
You can
maybe
take
Paris
the dive out of the man.
Last one, I don't know.
Mm. But either way, he's going to be there on Mars or wherever it is that you are going,
yeah,
great job. You don't drown.
Democracy.
Oh,
is Brillo cream like really like slimy then?
Well, they do lots of different brands.
Yeah.
So they definitely do gel, right. But they also do like actual hair cream and stuff right. like that as well. It's like a range of products. I only ever see it in barbers. I've never, yeah. I never purchase it. Don't need it.
I think it's associated quite a lot with the slick back yeah. hairstyles yeah. of the sort of mid 20th century.
Yeah.
That yes. kind of thing.
And also all the boy bands off of the early 2000s as well.
Yeah. yeah.
With their super glue hard hair.
Yeah.
It would be really cool if that were real, but unfortunately, Gel Divers 2 is not real.
Oh.
So sorry, Brill Cream. One day you will sponsor us and we'll do a video where our hair is all just vertical.
Oh, I'd love to do that, actually. Yeah, yeah I'd love to see the height
hair.
I could get.
A Jedward. Yeah, yeah. That would be great.
The reach.
Yeah.
We are, in fact, sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump. If you go and support us there, not only can you ask questions on this podcast, but you also get access to worst games and weirdest games before anybody else and exclusive access to episodes of Rules Boss and Main Menu. New episodes coming very soon. Mm-hmm. Triplejump is our website. That's where you can find links to everything we do. Triplejumpshop.com if you want to get some lovely fashionable merchandise that is just released. Any of us wearing a new merch today?
No,
not new merch.
Not new merch.
Just in comfies today.
Yeah. Yeah.
All wearing merch, just comfy yeah. old merch. And of course, patreon.com/teamtriplejump if you want to go support us there. A few things out on the channel this week, guys.
Yeah. Can I just add, yeah. that's not to imply that the new merch isn't comfy.
No, the new merch is comfy. It's yeah. just...
Sometimes you just want to throw on the thing that you've
well, exactly.
owned for
I'm
four
saying
years.
Comfies as in like it's just...
Yeah.
It's
I'm wearing
there.
My zip up today, not my pullover hoodie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. What was the question? What's out this
what's
week?
What's out this week, Peter?
There's a Worst Games Ever out this week. It's McFarlane's Evil Prophecy, which is just the best name of any game ever
really
made.
Good. Yeah.
yeah. It's a rubbish game. it's... Oh, it's spooky, or is it? No, it's not.
No.
Oh.
So you're going to have a great time. Yeah, it was baffling, really. It a baffling experience.
Very oh. bad. Mm. And you can find out all about it now, yeah. if you're a patron, mm-hmm. tomorrow, if you're not.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're at Insomnia, and that's the other thing mm-hmm. that we're stressing, as well as all the lists and wonderful other things that went out on the channel and all the live streams this week as well,
yeah.
Including a couple of live streams of games we'll be talking about in Review Corner a bit later on.
Indeed.
Should we get up with question one?
Yes, let's.
Yep, it's from Big Money Bobby Vegas, who says, Dearest BAP, Larian have decided to move on from Baldur's Gate with no plans for DLC for BD3 or, indeed, a sequel. Are you sad at this news, or are you excited to see what the studio will do with a new IP? Wishing you health, happiness, and £10 notes.
Oh,
BMBV. Thank you, BMBV.
Thank you,
Bobby
much.
Vegas.
Got a little snippet here from a Destructoid article that itself references an IGN article. Larian CEO Sven Vinker. Winkler? Winkler. Sven Winkler emphasized in a tweet that this move is entirely Larian's choice and that, quote, Wizards of the Coast really did their best and have been a great licensor for us, letting us do our thing. Speaking to IGN, he said that after the overwhelmingly positive reception of the game, Larian started working on DLC and ideas for a sequel, but quickly ran into a serious problem. Another quote here. You could see the team was doing it because everybody felt like we had to do it, but it wasn't really coming from the heart, and we're very much a studio all about being from the heart,
love that.
He told IGN. Part of the drain on the team's enthusiasm, he said, was that the studio had all these ideas of new combat to try out that were not compatible with Dungeons & Dragons 5e 5th edition. So there you go. Those are some reasons as to why this has happened. But to answer BMBV's question... I'm not sad as such at this news. I think it's a shame for Baldur's Gate and Dungeons & Dragons video game fans to think that this studio that came along and did it so well aren't sticking around to just do more of the same great stuff. You know, this game absolutely took the world by storm and by a surprise as well to some extent. But I personally am not sad. I think this is a great thing for them to do. Go off and do, you know, another hopefully great game without being constrained by, you know, Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition and other things. I mean, he makes it clear it wasn't Wizards of the Coast who said either that we don't want you to do any more, or oh, if you stick around, you're going to have to do this and this and this, and you know, like,
I think
really
it was more
cracking
like
the whip.
How much money they were going to have to pay them for the next game.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. That it's, you know, part of the, you know, the price of the license and so on. But it certainly doesn't sound like that they felt constrained specifically by Wizards of the Coast in a sort of oppressive way. I think it's more, it's carrot rather than stick. And to me, it comes across as though they've got all these ideas of what they want to do, and they would rather go off and perhaps do that in an environment or with an agreement that is less constrained. So I think this is great for them. I think they can like show us what they got in another capacity, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do.
I would love more Baldur's Gate 3, but if I'm not going to get any more, that's fine, because I loved what I did play, and I feel like I got a lot of a good experience out of Baldur's Gate 3. So I don't mind that they're not making any DLC for it. Would have been nice, but if I'm not going to have it, nothing's been taken away from me, really, so yeah, it's fine. I just really like the way Larian have talked about this, in that if the developers didn't want to do it, they weren't just going to force it through and like get more money from people.
Yeah.
Larian have been very transparent and honest about their views on things. Every time they've won an award, they've talked about how it should be the developers that are praised and they should be paid more, and shareholders do nothing but ruin games. And I think that's great. But I am excited to see what they'll do next. I don't know if they'll stick with the fantasy sphere or if they'll go somewhere else. I think that maybe, like they were saying with the combat stuff, if they're constrained so much by what D&D is, maybe they'll do something completely different in a similar vein. It will still be fantasy forward, and it'll still be a similar RPG to what Baldur's Gate 3 was. But maybe it'll just be either real-time combat or something completely different. But I'm excited to see what they do. I think that Larian have proved themselves to be a fantastic studio, and it would be nice to see what else they've got up their sleeves. Their chainmail sleeves, of course.
Wizard sleeves.
Wizard sleeves. But yeah, I think everything they've said about this has made complete sense, and I think it screams positive place to work, which is nice.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Their boss wears plate armor as well.
Yes, he does.
So he'll protect them
exactly,
as much as he can. I finished Baldur's Gate 3 and I didn't feel the need for any more. Mm-hmm. I can totally understand why people who are so enraptured with that game would love to see an expansion or more content. Although, given the insane amount of content there is in that game, I think it speaks volumes that the people who really enjoy it have started like 3, 4, 5 mm-hmm. different characters and are quite happy to just play through the game in different ways. Mm-hmm. And they're experiencing it, you know, whole new narrative angles and perspectives. So I don't think it's a great loss that there'll be no expansions or even necessarily a sequel. People love those characters as well. And I know that there are maybe a couple of characters or party members for whom some people felt like maybe they got slightly shafted in their story without mentioning specifics, and would maybe like to see that expanded upon so certain characters can have their happy ending. And I feel like that would be a shame not to give those characters that.
There's definitely a bit, I don't know if it was in it when you played, the like epilogue.
Yes.
The post kind of the camp
they added that, didn't they?
Yeah. And that does kind of give some people a bit more of a happy ending. But yeah.
It would be nice to have it maybe expanded upon if possible. Larian previously worked on Divinity Original Sin. In fact, I believe the Divinity series, citation needed, might actually be Larian's original IP. So I would not be shocked if they did maybe a Divinity Original Sin 3. And because for me, one of the main reasons I didn't enjoy Baldur's Gate 3 as much as other people was the combat, which obviously adhered very strictly to Dungeons and Dragons. Was it 5?
5e.
Being able to have total agency over their combat might be a bit of a risk, because it could be rubbish rather than basing it in something they know works. But also it could potentially appeal a bit more to me specifically. One thing that cannot be denied, though, is that they are fantastic world builders and writers. And the way that that game worked from a narrative perspective was phenomenal. And if they can keep that, but maybe change the combat slightly, then they may well have another killer game on their hands. And if it's a series that they own the rights to, then they'd be mad not to give it another try and have full ownership over that. But I can't see them straying from RPGs, because that's their bread and butter. That's what they do really well. So there we are. Those are my thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's time for a segment that I came up with last week, and I'm hoping you guys will like. It's called What We Play In.
You've got to stop coming up with segments.
Sorry. I wrote it down.
Oh, you did. It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about the games, what we have been playing. Peter Austin, what have you been playing?
Played a few things this week. Two of them I've already talked about in previous podcasts, and one of them I can't talk about right now because it's going to be in Review Corner.
Oh.
But I'll tell you all of them anyway. I have played a bit. I tried some Battlefront 2 online.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just crap.
It's crap,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I was getting like visual glitches, and like people were kind of moving around like lagging, but I don't think it was connectivity issue. Like it wasn't that I had bad internet. Maybe they had bad internet, but I get the feeling it was more perhaps a server problem. I don't know. Shrug. Took me a while to get into a game as well. What was I just going to say then? Something about
the Review Corner game?
No, something about Battlefront, but I don't know. Anyway, I don't think I'll be playing any more of that.
Okay.
Multiplayer. If anything, it's made me want to just go back. I never thought I'd say this. It's made me want to go to the modern Battlefront games.
Oh, wow.
You were quite a big fan of the multiplayer.
Yeah, I was actually. I put a lot of hours into both of those. And, you know, I think it's partly I just like the Frostbite engine, quite frankly.
It's very pretty.
Yeah, you know, I'm not like that keen on EA in general and their practices, especially, you know, in relation to Battlefront. But it's very, very pretty, that engine. And it's nice to explore those worlds in crisp, shiny, possibly ray traced, I don't know, definition. I've played some more Tomb Raider as well. Tomb Raider 2 I'm on now. Went and did the mansion level from Tomb Raider 2 as well, which I'd forgotten to do at the start of that campaign. And spent flipping ages trying to find a way to get through this door. There's a door I couldn't open. I can't remember if it had a keyhole next to it or not. I think it did. I went from top to bottom in the mansion, went into the hedge maze, found like a little secret tunnel and stuff. And eventually I was like, I'm going to have to Google this. I don't know how I'm getting into this room. And like, you can't get into it until you've completed the campaign.
It
may even be that you actually come to the house, like come back to the house as part of the story. I don't really know how it works, but yeah. So I wasted a lot of time doing that. But the third thing I've played, I'm going to talk about shortly, and that's Dragon's Dogma 2. But I'm going to keep fingers on lips until we go over to the quiet review corner
and say anything.
So that's what I've been playing this week.
I've only played one thing, and it's Final Fantasy VII. I'm 50 hours in, I'm on chapter 11, and I have a list of things I'd like to talk about without any context.
Okay.
I've got some pros and cons.
Go on.
Pro, the story is popping off and I'm enjoying what's going on.
Yeah.
Con, the bouncy mushrooms kept getting me lost. Pro, yeah, the locations are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Con, there's flying mini games. Pro, someone sounds like Simba now. Con, the Navi are here from Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
What's that about? What? I don't understand. Another con, Robo Chad, that upset me. A pro, there's a car. The car was fun to drive in. A con, getting out of the car takes ages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I kept getting lost. A lot in, they've suddenly introduced verticality,
yep,
and just routes that do not necessarily make the most sense, and I keep getting lost, but I'm now done both of those areas and never have to return, which is nice.
Fantastic.
It's a good mini game compilation is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Everything is a mini game.
There's a lot of mini games.
Every single thing is a mini game. And everything is like, oh, can you rank up to rank 3? And I'm like, I'm giving you the bare minimum, babe. I'm going to achieve it. And that's about it. The flying mini games, I had to get my boyfriend to do one of them because I couldn't
They're pretty tough. They are annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, there's a lot going on. And at one point when Robo Chad was introduced, there was like about 4 pages of text explaining a mini game to me. And it was too late at night and I refused to read it. And I just went in and hoped for the best. Managed to win the mini games that you have to do with it. But I didn't know what I was doing. I was just doing whatever I thought maybe was correct and winning. And I was like, I have no right to win this. And every time you go to another one, another text box pops up and tells you about a new thing that they've added. And I'm like, you've got to stop.
Yeah.
Enough is enough.
I did. I've also played some Final Fantasy, which I'll talk more about in a second. But I went back and did that side content that you're describing. And
the story part of it's really good. Yeah, and I really liked it. It's just a shame I had to do this weird other thing.
I had to, like, I too, my eyes just glazed over when it gave like 6 pages of instructions.
I was like, huh?
And I hit a brick wall because I needed to do all of them. And obviously it ramps up in difficulty. And I sort of just muddled my way through
but
the first
two. I figured out on the third one that you could just get it to do the auto-select stats for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's what I ended up doing. But when I was looking on Reddit, everyone was like, it is way too late in the game for it to be introducing like entirely new mechanics
for like
4 things
as well. Like there's 4 little mini games you have to do, and I had to, and you expect me to read 3 pages of text?
It's a lot.
I'm not going to do it.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah. But I've been enjoying it, and I think that it's really interesting. But the amount of times I've sat there like positively baffled about what's going on in the story. And I've had to be like, is this in the original game? To my boyfriend, he's like, no. And I'm like, what's going on? Why am I here? Why are the Navi here? I'm confused. But I don't know. I'm enjoying it, but I'm just, it's a big game and it just didn't need to be this big. I know that they're like, every time I do a mini game, Ben's like, oh, this was in the original game. And I'm like, but did it need to be in this game?
Sounds like if they'd not done all of that, they could have just released 1 full version of Final Fantasy VII Remake from start to finish. But,
well, this is the thing as well. I'm acutely aware that I'm going to get to the end of the game and I'm still not going to finish the story. And I'm going to have to wait another few years and then play another 50-hour game. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. And I'm probably, the reason I'm probably like slogging through it is because I'm doing everything in every area. Partially because I just don't want to have to come back. There's certain areas where I'm like, I don't want to have to relearn where everything is in this area and how to get around. There was an entire portion of one of the maps that I was like, I can't get here. Like, I must have to wait for like a door to open for me to be able to get around there. And then I just happened to be bouncing on some mushrooms and then eventually found my way in. And I was like, that was not, how was I ever supposed to figure this out? Mm. Because obviously, because when you're looking at the map, if you've not been there, it's all fogged out.
Right.
So you can't see if there's like a way in. And I was like tracing along the outside on my chocobo, like trying to find my way in. And it's also, I need them to stop making the Moogle thing so annoying. I don't want to deal with these weirdos and they're just making them annoying.
Kupo.
Anyway, that's what I play this week.
Right.
I also played Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I got tattooed on Saturday. In real life. And then I had a couple of days off just to feel sorry for myself and recover. And so I just sat there and played through the... I went back and did like all of the side stuff. Just so you complete... I completed like the world, so-called world intel for each region.
Yeah.
But I didn't... I haven't like maxed out all the mini games and stuff like that because I... skill issue and patience really as much as anything else. And then I thought, well, I should probably finish this game then. And I have now finished this game. I did it.
Oh, it's done, is it?
I've finished the game. The final 2 chapters, 14 chapters in total, are very linear.
Okay.
So you will, I mean, the penultimate one is a lot longer than the final one, but basically it's just like one roller coaster ride from start to finish towards the end of chapter 13. So you're pretty close to the end now. You're very close.
We're doing it.
I will, because anything I say could be construed as a spoiler, regardless of how I describe it. All I'll say is that I have finished it. I enjoyed the ride, and it has, much like the first part, just made me want to replay the original game. So I've got that downloading at the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'll play through that again for fun. Definitely some decisions in there that I don't agree with necessarily. But as we talked about on the lead up to release, that doesn't like make me mad or anything. I'm excited to see what their vision is and where it ends up going. And I can always play the original. I will always have that. A truly epic game to a fault almost. There's a lot going on in that game. And I'm sad that I have to wait for 5 years for the next one. And I truly hope that they stick the landing with whatever it is that they are trying to do. So that's what I will say for that. It's done. I've finished it. Apart from that, I played some more Redfall.
Oh, yeah.
Turns out that that map that you play in isn't the only area of the game.
Oh.
I completed that area of the game and thought, oh, my God, I've nearly finished Redfall. And it was like, here's another area.
Oh, wow.
Do it all again. Mm. It's just a thoroughly unremarkable, buggy
mess.
Shooter, like sandbox shooter. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just... Yeah. Just rubbish. I've got lots of clips of funny glitches where...
Is the story interesting?
No.
No.
I've honestly, I reached the point where I was kind of just skipping over stuff because I was like, I just want to shoot more things with, mm-hmm. with, you know, some TV on in the background. So I don't know if I'll return to that because I've been playing South Park Snow Day, which I'll talk about in Review Corner in just a second. That's a lie. Spoiler, South Park Snow Day is dreadful and I'd actually rather play Redfall. So maybe I will go back to Redfall. We'll see. Should we go to this this corner, Peter?
Let's hear how dreadful it is.
It's going to be spicy.
And here we are in the Review Corner.
Oh, lovely.
It's nice to be here. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Peter.
So you have been playing, as you just alluded to, some South Park.
I certainly have. Before we get started, yes. This is a blanket statement that applies to both of us.
Indeed.
Both of the codes that we were provided with that we're going to talk about today, that being South Park Snow Day and Dragon's Dogma 2, were provided by the respective developer / publisher. So thank you to THQ Nordic and Capcom.
Yeah.
It's Capcom, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. For providing those codes. But per ASA guidelines, we have to disclose that this is now technically... per their guidelines, an ad. However, there was no financial compensation in exchange for coverage. We're just talking about because we got a code, you know, the deal.
Yeah.
So let me tell you about South Park Snow Day.
Please do.
This is a new game, what has just come out this week. A terrible snowstorm has hit the town of South Park, causing the school to be closed. So the school kids get right into one of their fantasy role plays.
Of course they do.
So this is a similar sort of setting to... what was it called? The Stick of Truth.
Stick of Truth, yeah.
The Fractured But Whole with more superhero. Mm-hmm. This is very much their fantasy thing. Cartman is... all of the kids, the main characters are playing the characters that they did, you know, like Princess Kenny.
The same ones, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you play as a human taking on the evil elves. You start by creating your character in a relatively simplistic character creator.
Right.
You don't have a huge amount of cosmetic choices, but you do get access to some in the hub area. You can spend in-game currency to buy some more outfits and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. In terms of how you are fighting, melee-wise, you have the likes of a set of daggers or a sword and a shield. And you also have a ranged attack as well. And you can have a bow and arrow, a staff, or a wand. And they all do different types of attacks.
Right.
What you essentially are doing in this game is fighting through a series of areas, killing everything in it, maybe picking up an item, bumping into a memorable character or whatever, and then returning to the hub.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like it's not linear in the sense that it's a story you start and play through all the way. You're coming back to the hub after every time. It's called a run, basically.
Right.
And from the menu, it looks like there's going to be five. And each of them is split into different sections. In addition to those basic attacks, you also have cards.
Hell yes.
You love them.
Love them.
So whenever you start a different run, you will be presented with various cards for temporary buffs for that run.
Right.
So these can be things like your ability to escape an area by farting up into the sky because it's South Park.
Yeah, very funny.
Might draw enemies in, damaging them with fart power.
Mm-hmm.
Or the healing beacon that you could throw down on the ground will damage enemies that are nearby.
Right.
And I should also say that in addition to your melee attacks and ranged attacks, you also have a couple of powers that you can switch between that are able to be triggered, and those are two of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have another thing as well called a BS card.
Right.
Which is not what it's called in game. It's called Bullflip.
Right.
The full name.
Okay.
And whenever it's triggered by either you or the enemy, a voiceover goes, Bullflip! And it's basically the equivalent of the kids going, hey, no, you're cheating. That's not fair. That's Bullflip.
Oh, right.
It's like a special mega power that you can use a certain amount of times in any given game.
Right.
But as you go through these runs, you will occasionally bump into NPCs who will offer you new cards. That you can add to continue buffing what you've got going on, or you can spend toilet paper, which is the currency. Again, very funny, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, everyone's snowed in and toilet paper is a real commodity. Everyone's panic buying.
Well, just like it, yeah, exactly, like COVID.
Just like COVID, you can use that toilet paper to either reshuffle the cards you're being offered or to upgrade the rarity and the potency of a card that's presented to you. Mm-hmm. So by the time you finish a run, you're not going to be using these cards anymore. They're gone, basically. Okay. But it's just for the purpose of that run, so it's worth doing. At the end of each run, there's a boss, and there's like some cutscenes in there as you go, and so on and so forth. It is 4-player co-op.
Right.
That's the main attraction here, so you'll be running through with either 3 friends or 3 AI CPU-controlled mm-hmm. people. They will be automatically assigned. And if you don't have any people with you, you have to play with bots, basically. There will always be 4 of you running around doing these things.
Yeah.
So that is the basic gist of how the game plays. Mm-hmm. The problem is that it's really boring.
Right. So I've heard.
The combat is not good.
Yeah.
It basically boils down to just mashing the attack button and flailing in the direction of enemies. There's no lock-on button. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the sword and shield, if you have that equipped, if you hold down the attack button, you'll hold up your shield to block. But you're then locked in place and can only strafe and move forwards and backwards.
Okay.
So if you're not locked onto someone and they're in front of you, and then they decide to go round you, the block is pointless.
Right.
You can't react with them.
Yeah.
And oftentimes you'll go towards an enemy, start fighting them, and then your attacks will be so aggressive you'll shoot past them, mm-hmm. and the camera will stay behind you, and then you've got to manually... It doesn't feel good to play.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's really boring because you just do the same thing over and over and over and over again. It's also not very funny. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is only going to appeal to South Park fans. I am a South Park fan, but it doesn't, outside of like an actual bespoke bit of animation at the start of the game, which is done in the South Park style, 2D, yeah. It doesn't really feel like it's doing anything of its own. Whereas South Park, The Stick of Truth and The Fractured But Whole were telling their own story and creating their own lore and stuff that would actually feed back into the show.
Yeah.
This feels like it just references stuff from the show. It doesn't actually do anything itself.
New and interesting.
Which is a real shame. Mm. And obviously because it's South Park and it's poking fun at itself, it's poking fun at the fact that it's a video game, yeah. and there are kids there. You know, basically the things you're beating up are just, like the elves, are just kids wearing elf ears, mm-hmm. you know, and costumes and stuff. They'll say stuff like, I don't want to play anymore, or, oh, I'm bored now, I want to go home. And it's like... That's too close to the bone.
Yeah.
That's too close to the truth. We always talk about how in games like Saints Row, they poke fun at the fact that it's a video game. Like, I don't know, collect 20 of these or whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
And it's like, it makes it worse. Mm-hmm. It makes it worse that you're drawing attention to the thing that you're making me do is boring.
Yeah.
So when you've got characters in-game flippantly saying, I'm bored, I want to go home.
I don't want to play anymore.
And you're bored and you don't want to play anymore. It makes it way worse.
Yeah.
There's also there's a big stylistic change that I don't think doesn't work, which is that it's 3D instead of 2D.
Right. Okay.
I think actually the style adapts pretty well. Mm-hmm. Like when they're animated, you know, talking to you and stuff, they do emote very much like they would if they were 2D. So it's not too jarring seeing that graphical change for me. Mm-hmm. But there are some additional stuff that doesn't really work, like the fact it's in 3D when you're making your character and you wear a hoodie and a cape, for example. The hood of the hoodie pokes through the cape and it like clips through.
Yeah.
It looks a bit crap. If you're wearing a hat, your hair can clip through it. Mm-hmm. It's like, really?
Yeah.
If you're going to go for this style, you've got to pay attention to those details because mm-hmm. that's not a problem in 2D.
Yeah.
In 3D, that does become an issue. And also the AI people that you've got with you aren't the sharpest tools in the shed. I had them get stuck at the bottom of pits and die and then not get out of the pits mm-hmm. again and stuff. So it's a really baffling one.
Yeah.
And it's not a good game, but it's also not a horrendous game. I feel like if you have 4 mates and you're all big South Park fans, you'll enjoy the references that are in this game. You'll get something out of it. And it is also a budget title. It's only $24.99, mm-hmm. so it's not a full release. But it misses the mark massively for me as a big South Park fan and as a fan of The Stick of Truth and The Fractured But Whole.
Yeah.
This does not hit in remotely the same way, and I feel like that's a real shame. But it is out right now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, Switch, and PC, if you want to go and grab it.
Brilliant. Well, should we talk about Dragon's Dogma 2?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I have played some hours. I've streamed it as well as played in my own time. And the footage we're looking at now is actually, if you're watching on video, is just from my stream. Mm-hmm. It was... We talk about this later in the podcast, right? And that we have now already recorded that. And so I don't want to cover too much of the same ground. But I will touch on the fact that it's frustrating that in this game you can't start two separate save files.
Yeah.
That is why we're looking at the same stuff that you've already seen on stream. But regardless, Dragon's Dogma 2, let's talk about that. It's a follow-up to the game from 2015, was it, I think? Citation needed.
It's a long old while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. And you are once again playing as the Arisen, but the Arisen is a title. It's not a specific, so you're not the same character.
Right, okay.
So there is an interesting thing going on in this game, which is revealed right at the beginning, which is that there are apparently two Arisens. Now, the Arisen is essentially the nemesis of the dragon that plagues this fantasy world.
Okay.
And in a sort of a strange way, they're almost kind of chosen by the dragon, and then they become intertwined with each other, and they're destined to kind of fight with each other. Mm-hmm. And at the very beginning of the game, it becomes very clear that you are the Arisen, and the pawns who come from a different world will obey you as the Arisen, and they can see that that's who you are. And they can identify you as being special in that way. But also at the same time, there is the leader of the nation, the current king, is being hailed as the current Arisen. So you have been launched into this interesting situation where you know that you definitely are the Arisen, but the king is also claiming to be, and there can be only one, apparently.
Yes.
It's not possible for there to even have been two in the first place. It's not if there are two, they have to fight. It's like, no, there's only one.
Right.
So you essentially know that this is some kind of pretender. Uh-huh. And so that is kind of what sets you off on your adventure. I haven't played too much of the story so far because you are in this very large open fantasy RPG world, and there is always stuff to do, which is nice. And on top of there always being stuff to do that you perhaps want to go and do, there is also always stuff to do that I don't necessarily want to be doing all the time. One of those things is traveling around everywhere on foot. One of those things as well is faffing around with your inventory, which I'll get to shortly. But the point being, I haven't played a great deal more of the story beyond the kind of inciting events. So that's where we are. In terms of gameplay, you start the game and create a character with a pretty impressive character creation suite. It comes down to even strange details like there's like a tab for teeth. And when you select it, your character does this great big toothy smile. And the top row of teeth next to it in the UI, there is a series of ticks. And you can untick as many as you like, and the teeth will be gone. It's really kind of horrible, but brilliant. You can put multiple tones of color in your hair and choose how much they blend with each other. Mm-hmm. There are other races as well, kind of furry-esque characters.
Okay.
They kind of had like cat features. So you create your own character, and then very shortly after that, you also create your own pawn, which is one of the unique selling points of the Dragon's Dogma series, as it now is. For those who don't know, a pawn is a character who will follow you around and be your assistant, and you can have a party of up to four, that is you plus three other pawns. You only get to create one of them, and the others are hired in from other players, which is a really interesting thing. And you can, of course, share your pawn code with other people, and so they can hire your character specifically. I, of course, made our boy Billy Ray Walrus.
Absolutely.
It was difficult to do, actually. I, of course, chose the Animal Man class, but one of the only fur colours I couldn't do was pink.
Oh, no.
So I had to cover him in some humongous tattoos.
Oh, God.
Just, I selected the block square tattoo and scaled it up so it covered his entire body.
The classic wrestling creation suite solution.
Yes.
If people check your Twitter, they can find the code for that, right?
They can, yes. If you want to hire Billy Ray, you can do so. And there's a whole load of interesting stuff around that now. They've added to it as well. So you are always able to hire other people's pawns, and then when you send them back, you can give them a gift, which they will then take back to that player. Mm. Quite often people just send each other like rotten fish or like just any old bit of tat. But you can, you know, be kind if you want to. But they've now also added a mechanic where you can set a quest for your own pawn and a reward for it for the player who helps your pawn to do that quest.
Okay.
So, for example, you can say, kill a cyclops, which is a sort of a mini boss you can encounter in the wild. And if you do that, you can have this item or this amount of gold. You can set it yourself however much you want. So that, I think, is partly to encourage people to pick your pawn out of all the others. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not selecting pawns by pawn code, then you will just get a room full of like 10 of them randomly selected from the server, and you just want to choose from that crowd. So I guess you want to make sure your pawn's the most appealing. Give it a good quest. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of the basics of character and stuff. Other than the fact that there are a number of classes that you can select from for both yourself and for your pawn. There's I can't remember the specific names, but there's like a fighter, a wizard, an archer, and a thief. And they all have certain sets of weapon and armor that they can or can't use. Some can be used by multiple classes, some can't. And this is where I've started to run into what I kind of feel like are some issues. With the combat, it is quite interesting. There are a whole load of different skills and things you can learn for each of the classes, and you can kind of assign them to like hotbar or like quick shortcut buttons thing. Like you hold L1 and press a face button to do a certain attack. But as a thief, which is what I chose, and I imagine as well as the warrior class, you don't initially have any ranged attacks at all, which is no problem at all when you're dealing with goblins or wolves or something like that. But if a harpy flies at you, you just can't get it yourself. Now, I'm sure that is, to an extent, it's designed to encourage you to have a mixed selection of pawns in your team. Mm-hmm. And so you can get a wizard in or an archer and they will do some of that work for you.
Yep.
And it's then possible to ground any kind of flying attacker so that then the other people can move in and deal with it. But the problem is that if you're not very good AI friends aren't doing what you want them to do, then you can't deal with these enemies very well. So I found that very frustrating. Now, I did eventually unlock an attack called Ensnare, where I can throw a rope at something, but you can't properly aim it and it's difficult to hit. So I've really struggled with that. I just think there's a lot of busy work in this game that is distracting from what could be a lot of fun. It looks fantastic, and in many ways it plays very well when you're just doing the gameplay cycle of combat, climbing on great big monsters and stabbing them in the eye and, you know, having a lot of fun doing all that kind of thing. But you do a lot of running around, and I know that's the controversy that has followed this game before its release about the lack of fast travel or the limited fast travel.
It's got to be boring, right?
It is boring.
To have fast travel.
I find it boring that I can't just that I've got to run across the same place all the time, because you know you're going back to the main city a lot, and so you're always on these outskirts dealing with the same kinds of enemies. There's just goblins and harpies everywhere. And you know, do I want to spend consumable items to fast travel? What if I need those in an emergency situation? Like the other day, I suddenly realized, oh, I need to stop playing right now. And I was like, well, I want to go and sleep at an inn before I turn the console off. I had to just use one of my fairy stones in order to get back to the city very quickly, which felt like a shame. But so as well as running around the same area a lot and dealing with a lot of the same enemies, your inventory just fills up with so much crap, and then you get over encumbered, and if you're over encumbered or even close to over encumbered and have a lot of stuff, you're moving slowly, you can't sprint for as long. I think it affects your attacks as well. So to me, as I'm going to get to in the big discussion at the end of this podcast, it feels like there is such a good foundation here for a very pretty looking game with some really interesting like enemy designs, a compelling story so far from what I've experienced, and a really good USP in the pawn system. But then it's just so bogged down by, of course, the microtransaction controversy, the lack of fast travel, and the overall kind of cycle of fill up your inventory with loads of stuff, run back, and probably not run as fast as you ran out from here because you're so full of stuff. And so that, I'm finding, is really hampering the experience for me, which is a real shame.
It's a shame.
Just to add to that, I have also, although I've not had any bugs, I've experienced some a lot of slowdown with particle effects, and if there are a lot of enemies nearby, that is you know, affecting the experience as well. So yeah, bit of an all over review there without touching on some of the stuff we're going to get to in the big discussion. But yeah, those are my first impressions, is that there's such a good foundation here, and I think it's been sort of hampered by some of the experimental choices that have been made.
Right. A bit stubborn in places, you think?
Yeah, I think so. And it just comes across as, it feels like some stuff has been put in there purely to kind of slow you down, make you work harder, rather than to kind of add to the experience and just, oh, this is here to be really fun. I'm sure everything or most of the things were added with the intention of being fun, but it just doesn't come across like that all the time. Mm-hmm. Which is, I know I'm kind of in the minority there, because this game was reviewed so well, particularly before it was actually released. And it was reviewed very well critically and has been received not quite as well commercially. But yeah, so in that sense, I'm in a bit of a minority. But I kind of wish it had just lived up to what is quite clearly some huge potential. And it is by no means a bad game, but I don't think it's quite as good as it could have been.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
You're going to stick at it and see how you find it
next
week?
Yeah, I'm going to keep going and see how I get on. And, you know, it might just be that I need to upgrade my character a bit more, get stronger, learn, you know, better, like, routes and things. And these are probably all the kinds of things they were trying to encourage. And but it's not so intuitive that it feels like, oh, here's what I need to do, here's what they want me to do, the developers. It just kind of feels like, oh, how am I going to overcome these obstacles they've just put in my way in an almost spiteful way, which, as I say, I'm sure that's not the intention, but that's how it has been feeling to me this week.
Well, that's a shame.
It is a shame.
Hopefully,
so I was looking forward to it.
It picks up for you as you play.
Yeah, it's not a write-off, but it's not the best first impression, sadly.
Wonderful. The first game came out in 2012.
2012.
That was a PS3 360 era game, that one.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shall we move on to the forecast for April?
With Ashton.
After three pretty stacked months in gaming, it's almost a delight that we've not got too much dropping in April. Though not too much is still not nothing. So there's still a few games I want to give you the lowdown on that are coming out over the next 30 days. First up, launching on April 9th, is indie puzzler Botany Manor. Set in a Victorian English manor in 1890, you take on the role of botanist Arabella Green as she explores the grounds and gardens. The first-person puzzler focuses on the growing of fussy plants that require incredibly specific habitats, the clues for which you can find all over the house in paintings, postcards, letters, etc. Grow plants, solve puzzles, and find out more about the career of Arabella and the issues she has overcome as a female scientist. Botany Manor launches on PC, Xbox, and Switch. Next is 2.5D Metroidvania, Tales of Kenzera, Zao, a passion project from the voice of Bayek in Assassin's Creed Origins, Abubakar Salim. Inspired by the loss of Abubakar's father, the game follows a young shaman named Zao on his journey to capture three monster spirits as penance to the god of death in an attempt to bring his father back from the dead. The side-scrolling platformer features both up-close melee combat and ranged attacks, take down enemies, and collect soul energy to purchase new skills. The beautiful-looking Tales Tales of Kanzera Zao launches on PC, Xbox, PlayStation and Switch on April 23rd. Another RPG out this year, and also out on April 23rd, is Eiyuden Chronicle 100 Heroes. Part of the Suikoden series, 100 Heroes sees you playing as young Imperial officer Sane Kessling and their new friend Noah as they embark on a quest to find an artifact that will expand their empire's power. However, they are soon pulled into the fires of war and forced to reevaluate their beliefs. With your party of six, you'll fight your way across the land using the turn-based battle system in a beautiful 2.5D world. Eiyuden Chronicles 100 Heroes launches on PC, Xbox, Switch and PlayStation. Next up we have action RPG Sandland, the third-person adventure game based on the manga series of the same name. Launching on April 26th, you'll play as the fiend Prince Beelzebub and team up with his pals Thief and Sheriff Rao to find the legendary spring hidden in the desert. Using your demonic powers and very cool unlockable vehicles, you'll traverse the sands and build your base into a thriving city. The game features an art style incredibly similar to that of the OG manga, and looks to be a lot of fun for those who are fans of adventure, base building, or just being a little devil. Sandland launches on PC, PlayStation, and Xbox. The last one I want to tell you about is PS5 exclusive Stellar Blade, formerly known as Project Eve, the third-person action-adventure launching on April 26th. You'll play as Eve, who's been deployed back to Earth to try and reclaim the planet for humanity through combat with a focus on attack patterns and precise timing. Eve meets Adam, who shows her the last surviving human city, Zion. And from there, with the help of people she's met along the way, she's off to save mankind from the alien Natiba. It looks to be one for fans of games like Nier, Bayonetta, and Rise of Ronin. Of course, that isn't everything. We have Sea of Thieves hitting PlayStation, Another Crab's Treasure launching on April 25th, and the Braid Anniversary Edition dropping at the end of the month. So have a wonderful time playing in April, and now it's time to get back to the podcast.
It's time now for question two.
Thanks, guys.
What a great forecast.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
Forecast it. Thanks, thanks all three of us.
Yeah, great job. Didn't we all do such a good job?
Yeah.
It's time for question two now. It comes from Chris McVeigh. Hi, BAP. With the news that Toys for Bob have secured a deal with Xbox to make their first game as an independent studio, and the belief that whatever game it is will be presumably involve a Microsoft-owned IP, what do you think of rights holders giving indie studios a crack at making games in recognisable franchises? I realise that, in the event that this is Spyro 4 or something, it would be a bit of a stretch to call it an indie game given the studio and series' existing history together, but I mean more in a Sonic Mania or Cadence of Hyrule sense. Do you think this sort of thing is a big break situation for indie developers, or are indie games better when they get to create characters and worlds to call their own?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
This is where I think people get a bit too black and white about what an indie studio is. Mm. I appreciate that it is an abbreviation of independent studio, and therefore, by that strict definition, it simply means one that is, you know, not owned by a larger corporation. They just develop a game, and that's it. But, you know, and technically that's what Toys for Bob is now, right? They're completely independent in terms of ownership. But if they're basically just going back to Activision/Xbox and maybe even making Spyro 4, that's where I think there are some kind of gray areas where, you know, it's, yeah, they are indie by their nature, but it's probably going to turn out very similar to stuff they've worked on in the past, which I think is interesting. I hope it's Spyro 4, and there is perhaps some evidence to suggest that it could be, but absolutely nothing concrete. But I think
it would be silly not to be.
It certainly would be. It's just whether, I guess it ultimately comes down to whether Activision want to do a Spyro 4, because Toys for Bob have said that they do want to do one. So that's probably where it's going to, you know, where it's going to come down to. But do we see this sort of thing as a big break for indie developers? I think that it doesn't necessarily matter one way or the other whether they are working on something completely unique and their own idea, or if they are working for a big publisher as a kind of a third party. I think, as I feel like I often say with answering these questions on this podcast, it's very much case by case basis.
Yeah.
You know, I think obviously there are some indie studios who have worked on some fantastic, very popular projects where it was just a completely unique idea. They came up with it themselves and maybe self-published. But likewise, there are some really good games out there where an indie studio was brought on by a bigger company to work on something that was, you know, licensed. I think it's very difficult to say more than that, really, other than I hope Toys for Bob do very well.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing what it is that they're doing. And if it does turn out to be not Spyro 4 and potentially not even anything that is already an Xbox or Activision IP, you know, this could be brand new IP. It's just under their banner that they've decided to, you know, Activision or Xbox have decided to create some new character or a new game. Then, you know, Toys for Bob could still be making a mascot platformer or something that just happens to not be Spyro or Crash. So I'm just watching with bated breath, and that's all I think about this, really, is that I hope it's good, and I don't think it matters necessarily, the situation with indie studios and big publishers.
I think it's somewhat beneficial to everyone for a big company like Microsoft to give an independent studio access to an IP, because a lot of these IPs that are kind of held in the vaults, especially at Microsoft, even with like Embracer, which is the example of what not to do with an IP, mm-hmm. is give it to an indie studio with no money and then force them to push it out. Like, was Gollum was definitely Embracer, wasn't it? Or was Gollum just...
Yeah, it's gotta be. Yeah. I'll double check.
But... yeah, I think that like there's a lot of examples, obviously, when it's gone wrong. However, I think that it's beneficial for a big developer or a big studio to give it to someone else, because I think that if you've not got the time and energy and money to put into this because you're working on big blockbuster AAAs, then why not give these smaller IPs, these existing franchises, to trusted indie studios and see what they can do with it? Because as much as obviously it's nice to see new IPs form from indie studios, lots of brilliant games have come out of indie studios like Chia and Kena and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more. But like, you see these games that have done really well by indie studios, and yeah, they've made some new things, and it's great that they've got the creative license to do whatever they need to do. However, it's also great to see that these franchises that maybe haven't been done anything with for the last 10 years are finally getting a boost because they're being handed down to an indie studio rather than kept under lock and key off the off chance that big studio might decide to do something with it. I think it's a good thing, and I think that as much as, you know, you can see the negatives, I choose to see the positives, and I think that it will be a good thing, and hopefully Spyro 4,
maybe,
fingers crossed.
Developed by Daedalic, published by Nacon.
Oh, so it wasn't.
No. But they do have the Lord of the Rings rights.
Yes, that's the thing. So, that's why I got confused.
Yeah,
it varies, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I think in the case of specifically Toys for Bob, they more than earned the right to work on a Spyro or a Crash, and I personally would like to see them do that. They could certainly make an original mascot platformer, and that will certainly find an audience, but that's a really tough market. It's not even necessarily a crowded one. You know, the likes of Yooka-Laylee and A Hat in Time have their fans, but they weren't big breakout successes. And I think it would be a real shame if Toys for Bob didn't get to make their Spyro game and they didn't get to make another Crash game.
Yeah, I think no matter how, because they're clearly good at that genre, but I think no matter how good they did with a brand new one, it's just not going to... I think that type of game nowadays only really sells on its like star power or its nostalgia power. I think
it's a bit niche,
like,
nowadays.
Yeah, it's niche, and it's actually quite an old-fashioned genre. And the only reason, or the main reason, I think, that the likes of Spyro and Crash have been doing well is because of who they are. And if you'd made exactly the same game, but instead of a bandicoot, it was a fox, which he basically is, it just wouldn't have done anywhere near as well as it did do.
Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, is it the right thing for an indie dev to make their own game or work on an existing IP? I would love, just to pull an example out of thin air, to see Eric Barone make a Star Wars themed Stardew Valley game where you just farm, but it's Star Wars licensed. I'd like to see that, sure. Mm-hmm. Would he like to make it? I don't know. Would I prefer to see his haunted chocolatier thing that is wholly, you know, original? Probably a bit more. Yes, I would. And he would probably prefer to make that as well. But, you know, certain developers have a real passion for these licenses and it might be a dream to work on them. I can't remember specifically off the top of my head the name of the veteran developer who was like a huge old school Disney fan. And then eventually he got the opportunity to work and make Epic Mickey. And that was like a dream come true for him. I want to say Warren Spector, but
should I look it up?
Yes, please. That is probably completely incorrect. I think he did Deus Ex. I don't know if it's the same guy. Anyway, I'm getting confused. But point is, some developers, whether they're independent or not, have a real passion for certain licenses. And if they get the opportunity to work on them, that could be just as much a passion project as something original would mm-hmm. be. Also, work for hire is
Warren Spector.
So I got it right.
Yeah.
Hooray. Work for hire is a very real thing that studios do. Sometimes they will, like I used to work for Splash Damage for a very short period of time and they did loads of work for hire stuff like the multiplayer for Gears of War and various other stuff as well. Like Unreal Tournament stuff, not Unreal Tournament, Quake Wars, Enemy Territory or something like that. They did some work for hire stuff so that they could finance some stuff that they made originally, like Brink or, you know, Dirty Bomb was another one that they made as well. So there's absolutely no shame in that. And working on you know, with a license or a big, well-known IP does provide something of a safety net. It's practically a guaranteed payday, even if it's not something you're passionate about. So I wouldn't begrudge an indie studio taking on a license because they have to, not even necessarily because they want to. It's, you know, anything to prevent the layoffs and keep things afloat and then work on something that you are passionate about potentially down the line.
And as Ashton says, anything to get some of these IPs out of the prison that they're locked in with some of these huge companies that are so big they don't even know what they've got, probably. You know, they're not even aware of some of the stuff they own.
Absolutely. Like Time Splitters.
I wish there was like a list of, well, there probably is somewhere someone's done it, like a list of everything that Microsoft currently own, because now they've absorbed everyone. I would like to know what they have that like is there.
Well, I've seen some speculation that Toys for Bob could make a good Banjo-Kazooie game as well, which I'm sure they could. That's not what I'd like to see.
Is Banjo-Kazooie still relevant today?
Well, again,
that's the question.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
No idea, but you know, Microsoft own more than just Activision's mascot platformers now. Mm-hmm. They also own their own stuff, or well, not their own, but stuff that they've acquired elsewhere.
I think it makes sense to farm some of these IP out. You know, there's a lot of stuff even Sony has that they just haven't touched, like since the PS3 era. Get someone working on a Resistance game that isn't a first party, you know, even if it's a flipping isometric tactical RPG or something where you know, or flipping, what's it called, where you move your units about. What's that? RTS. That's what I'm trying to say. My brain is not working. just make something. Keep this IP relevant.
Well,
you know, don't
is,
let it languish.
Sony are really good at like finding a game that they think will launch really well, like Stray and Chia and Kena as like the three kind of the last few years examples. And finding a studio that's working on something really cool, bringing them under the PlayStation umbrella and letting them do something really cool. And then they've got these brilliant studios that are part of their team that they could very easily palm off something on and be like, can you do this, please? Because we don't want to. And we've seen what you can do.
Yeah.
There's loads of studios out there we've seen like the glimpse of greatness from them. And it would be nice to see what else they can do with something else.
We're not selling any PlayStation VR 2 headsets. Hey, studio that exclusively makes VR games, it'd be great if you made a good game. But even if you don't, how about you make
a flat game?
How about you make an exclusive Warhawk VR game, you know? Remember Warhawk?
I thought you were going to say Warhorse, like the movie.
Yes, Warhorse.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is a Warhorse game maybe somewhere.
Probably.
That'd be a bit weird though if there was, right?
Yeah, it would be a bit, and it would probably make the headlines, you know?
Yeah, that would make it weird news.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's weird news time, time for some weird video game news. Remember, if you'd like to submit some weird video game news and get a shout out at this point in the podcast, then you need to put it under the relevant social media post that goes out on a Tuesday. However, if you'd like to guarantee a shout out, you need to go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump, support us at the appropriate tier, and become a podcast producer just like
Chip Thompson's Thumbs,
G.Y. Goliath,
Nexus Polaris,
Nicole Hansen,
Kyle Gary,
Andy Scott,
Blake Thomas,
Lockie Morris.
I'm way too high.
Shaman or Shaman Nomo.
Great Giggity.
Melody L. Bonnet.
Katie Garrett.
Gabrielle Philippink.
Potato Shag 99.
Eric Thew.
And Big Money Bobby Vegas. I like that even though we know that Ben is like having a brain mush day and and not feeling great, we're still like, we'll just let you do it. We'll let you get through this.
What, the complicated intro?
Yeah, all the bits
and
pieces.
I don't mind doing
that,
it if you want.
No, I don't mind doing it, but I just like that we watch Ben struggle.
Professional. It only takes me 6 tries.
Yeah.
It's weird news time.
Yeah. This was sent to me. No, it wasn't. It was sent to the thread by Gex at SnowyBoyYannio4 on Twitter. And it's according to NintendoLife.com. And I think it's
random.
It is. It's random. It's written by Ollie Reynolds, who says, random. Japanese police officer gets slapped wrist for playing Switch on duty. Then there's a good little quote in the subheading. I played games when there were few incidents. Not no incidents, just not many.
Only some light muggings.
Yeah. We all know how easy it can be to lose ourselves in our Nintendo Switch from time to time. You might find yourself picking up something like Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, hyperlinked, or recently launched Balatro and have a genuine... Huh? What's
is
that?
Is that card game that everyone loves?
Maybe.
Loves.
Let me Google it.
And have the genuine intention to only play for around 10 or 15 minutes. Suddenly, it's 2 a.m. and your bladder is in dire need of some drainage.
Gross! Irrigation.
We've all been there. Yeah, for one Japanese police officer at the Tenri police station, however, time on the Switch has unfortunately meant that his attention to his role has suffered, leading to a bit of a slapped wrist and docked pay. Via Japan News.
Spanky bot bot.
Indeed. Spanky wrist wrist. According to the article, the officer played the Switch a total of 10 times while on duty, with his total playtime adding up to a whopping 17 hours.
Wow.
Over how long?
10 times.
10 shifts.
17 hours.
Shifts.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
He had connected the Switch to a TV in the station's break room.
He's not even playing it in handheld.
But was ultimately caught during an unannounced inspection of duties. He admitted to wrongdoing and stated, I played games when there were few incidents. Oh dear. The prefectural police.
Yes, in Japan they have prefectures. It's like counties.
Oh, is it like a like a region or something? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Has since confirmed that the officer's pay will be deducted in line with the amount of time spent playing the Switch. It just goes to show, no matter how awesome the Switch is, you shouldn't neglect your duties to play a bit of hyperlinked Princess Peach Showtime.
And then in parentheses, we may make some money off this link because it is affiliate.
Regardless of how tempting it may be. Thanks to Great Song for the tip. What did you make of the story from Japan? Was the employee treated fairly for his actions? Let us know.
Ah. We don't know what he played. That's the most annoying thing.
No, we don't.
No, that's true. Probably Tears of the Kingdom.
There are 46 comments. That's a lot.
And what do they think about it?
Lol, this was me being caught playing my GBA under the covers at night when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's very different though,
yeah,
isn't
you're
it?
Not, yeah. You weren't actually in charge of crime.
Someone underneath that, I think, very straightly, like I said, don't do it while you're on duty. That's not okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, mate.
It's good.
I need to know what game he was playing before I can make any judgment.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. He was playing The Last Hope.
Oh, dead end, the last time.
Oh, yeah.
War Zeus, God of Child, whatever it is.
I have some news that I found myself.
Whoa. Wow.
And I picked it because of the drama.
Ashton.
It's from Nintendo Life by Liam Doolan. Random. It's done. Every Super Mario Maker level has been cleared before the Wii U's online shutdown. The last unbeaten course was actually an illegitimate upload.
So did they stop the uploads at some point?
So once it goes offline, you won't be able to access all of the made...
But if someone's played all of them...
So there was a few that weren't beaten.
I don't think it's a single person's played them
That someone's beat every single thing. Because a few of them were unable to be beaten because they were so hard.
I was just curious as to whether people can still upload levels, because then surely there's even more levels there.
I don't know.
Right? Semantics, anyway. Yeah. Carry on.
Earlier this week, we revealed how a trained task force dubbed Team 0% was attempting to complete every community level in the original Super Mario Maker game before Nintendo shut down online functionality for the Wii U and 3DS on the 8th of April. While it was struggling to knock over one final level called Trimming the Herbs, since then the story has taken a bit of a turn, with the creator of this level confirming it was an illegitimate upload. Therefore, the final community level was in fact The Last Dance, which was cleared by Yamada SMM2 on the 15th of March 2024. This means every community level in the game has now been cleared. Mission complete!
Hey.
Here's part of what the team behind this effort had to say in the update. Trimming the Herbs was in fact a TAS, tool-assisted speedrun, making The Last Dance the final level cleared. To get to this point, the Mario Maker community had to knock over a whopping 25,000 unbeaten levels since last October. It's once again a tremendous feat. Then there was a tweet saying, PSA, in case you noticed a clear on Trimming the Herbs, this clear is 100% confirmed by the mod team to be hacked. We have been given written evidence from them admitting to cheating the first clear from a modded Wii U. People will keep trying to give it a go. So say basically the person who said that they'd done it, they lied.
Okay.
And they cheated, which means that they haven't actually done all of the levels. That's the last one left.
Yeah.
The most recently completed one was Last Dance from last month. But so that's all, folks. The shutdown of the Wii U and the 3DS online services will take place next month in April. If you've got the last minute things you want to do while the service is still active, now is the time to boot up those old Nintendo devices and do them.
Yes. Does it not mean that they have done all the ones that are humanly completable? I suspect... My understanding of that is that the person who made the map, I think maybe you have to prove that it can be done
before
it's uploaded as beatable.
Right.
And they used a tool-assisted speedrun to beat it the first time round.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but it's a bit confusing because they say it's a tool-assisted speedrun in the finishing. So I read that as whoever did it cheated by using
I thought that meant that whoever made it completed it with a modded console, and because they completed it in air quotes, it then gets like added to the store or the download page as beatable because it's being
beaten. For quality
beaten.
Control, that would make sense, right? You have to beat it yourself.
And then because they've discovered, it was uploaded as beatable but wasn't really, it's not actually beatable, then they realize, that means we've done them all then, because this last one that we were trying to beat is not actually beatable.
You might be right. And also someone's saying that finding out that the final level is voidable after days of attempting it is actually the lamest possible way to hit 100%.
Technicality. Such
an
anti-climax, isn't it?
It's like, you did it, but you actually did it last, like, a few weeks ago. But
you didn't realise when you did it.
We didn't want to talk about it. Anyway, that's my weird news.
Brilliant.
Great stuff. I've got weird news as well. It comes from Amy Wicks.
Wicks.
This is from thegamer.com. A bunch of game devs gathered outside GDC, Game Developers Conference, to scream.
Right.
Cool.
This is written by Rhiannon Bevan. The gaming industry is in a terrible state right now. Yeah. Just as we get some of the best games in living memory, the developers that make them are losing their jobs in endless layoffs. More than 10,000 jobs were cut in 2023.
Sorry, in living memory? All of video gaming is in living memory.
It's a very good point, yeah.
Not if you're dead.
No.
Have you played tennis for two?
But you only have to be about 50 to have been around for all of video gaming.
That's true.
Sorry, carry on.
Maybe it's just a thesaurus job for Rhiannon.
Yeah.
Where are we? More than 10,000 jobs were cut in 2023, a figure that industry executives are already close to surpassing in 2024.
We're doing a new record. 0% speed run.
It's so bad that it makes you want to scream. So that's exactly what some people did. At GDC this year, a bunch of game developers met up in one place and just screamed. Videos from the event are circulating online, and the attendees certainly didn't hold back, screaming out in the open in pure frustration. Here we are. So that's it's a 20-second long video.
It's good to have hobbies.
Live art pieces people do in the street where they like paint themselves blue and stand next to a dead cow or something.
Mm-hmm.
I do love a bit of live art.
Yeah.
So
I don't. The games industry is falling apart around us and we're all flocking to San Francisco for a week to pretend like this is fine, reads the event's description. Let's take a minute where we all stop pretending and express just how it feels to be a game developer in 2024.
I mean, that is pretty true, isn't it?
Reactions to the scream, which was described as a moment of catharsis, camaraderie, and caterwauling, are split. Many are sympathetic to the attendees, understanding why they need to let loose like this. Others feel that a meeting of like-minded game devs could have been put to better use, like planning unionization efforts or doing something more practical. With that said, anyone screaming about the state of the industry is probably pro-union too, and we are seeing an increasing number of workers join or organize unions themselves. It then continues to talk about GDC. But yeah, let them scream. I don't imagine they were screaming all day.
No.
It's probably their lunch break.
For like a few minutes, yeah.
Yeah, go outside, have a little bit of a scream.
And they got their headline.
They did.
That's what they were going for. Mm-hmm. Of the gamer.
I hope they all feel better because of it. You know?
Yeah.
It's good to have a cry. It's good to have a scream.
It is. Probably a big public scream feels even better than a private little scream in your bedroom.
I feel like if you were like wanting to go and have like a good scream, you just got to go to like a cliff out to the sea and just scream into the ocean.
Yeah.
That's like the best place to scream.
Or in the desert.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's like those smash rooms where you can go and like smash loads of plates and stuff.
And TVs and whatnot.
Let it out.
Yeah.
It's healthy. Well, it's time, everyone, for the big discussion. Big discussion time for the big video game discussion that this week comes courtesy of Robert Goulding. Robert says, hi, Bap.
Hi.
Hi.
With the release of Dragon's Dogma 2 to great reviews and the news that Capcom were the highest rated company on Metacritic for 2023, it looked like they were off to the races this year too. However, with the news coming out that the PC launch of Dragon's Dogma 2 is full of microtransactions for elements such as purchasable extra fast travel consumables, something that the creators of Dragon's Dogma 2 had stated was due to fast travel being only an issue because your game is boring, is this a sign that Capcom are on a slippery slope which other publishers are no doubt going to follow where key consumables of the game are essentially locked behind a paywall unless you get very good luck with in-game drops? This feels frankly disgusting in a game that showed a strange pride in not having readily available fast travel. And it makes me question if they were pushed into it by Capcom and positioned it as a creative decision to try and hide the plans to nickel and dime people.
Mm.
I'm about to cough. Would you mind one of you reading that?
Go for it,
sure.
Peter.
This is according to Willa Rowe from Kotaku. Dragon's Dogma 2, the sequel to Capcom's 2012 cult RPG, is out now, and critics have been raving about the game's expansive world and intricate systems. But some fans that have purchased the game aren't too happy, and on Steam, user reviews currently have it sitting at a rating of mixed. The cause for many of the more negative responses to the game lie in its microtransactions.
Mm-hmm.
There are 21 pieces of DLC for the game that are considered microtransactions, giving players access to items like life-restoring wake stones, currency in the form of rift crystals, and even the ability to edit your character's appearance. The prices of each...
Can you not edit your character's appearance?
You can do all of these things in-game at a cost.
Right.
It's an item that you have to purchase with in-game currency. Same with these like wake stones and various things, but you can just pay real money to just get it instantly.
Right.
Is how it works here. The prices of each microtransaction range from 99 cents to $4.99. The biggest complaints from those who purchased the game have come down to the existence of these microtransactions in a full-price single-player game, the idea that this is a pay-to-win tactic, and that it locks important customization features behind a paywall. I don't think that's strictly true. Capcom issued a response to these concerns and other criticisms on Steam on March 22nd. The post addresses concerns about crashes and bugs, but a large section is devoted to paid DLC. Capcom reminds players that the majority of the items available to purchase as microtransactions are also available to be obtained in-game. So that's the majority, not all. But
thank you very much. Just to follow up on the customization paywall thing, that is a bit misleading, but I think because there has been a further story now where those items that you need to fully customize your character again are very limited in game.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there's an unlimited supply if you have actual money. Mm-hmm. They have now updated that. So there's like a capacity of 99 in any particular vendors. So you can, while you will still have to grind to purchase them yourselves, there's not a finite supply of them in game anymore, which is the correct decision, I think, there.
Yeah.
Peter, you've actually played Dragon's Dogma 2.
I have.
We spoke about it earlier on.
We did.
How are you finding it in regards to this stuff?
Well, to look behind the curtain, we've not recorded that review corner yet, so I don't know what I just said.
Okay.
So I don't want to cover too much ground again, but I am finding it like kind of disappointing in a way. I feel like there is a game here that should just be really good and fun, and it's like a bit bogged down in what sometimes feels a bit kind of pretentious. I don't know if that's just because we've had that quote now about how fast travel is only needed in games that are boring, and now I can't get that attitude out of my head that these developers are maybe a bit on their high horse about how great their game is. But every time the game does something that just kind of inconveniences me, it makes me feel really bitter and like they're just doing it on purpose to like not challenge me in a constructive way, but just to like actively hinder me. And, you know, I think that's a PR issue as much as a development issue. I think like the way they've handled this, it makes it really difficult. They are backpedaling on some of these things now, as you've said already, Ben, about like the customization items. The game launched with no option to either have multiple saves on the go, multiple characters on the go, which was news to me when I came to stream it. Well, not literally when I was live, but before I streamed, I realized, oh, I can't start a separate story. Like I was a couple of hours in from my home story playthrough, and I was like, oh, this isn't going to be very good for the people watching at home as I just launch into the middle of a story. Mm. So that was annoying. And you can't even overwrite the save of your one game to start again. The game is unrestartable. So once you started it, if you regret some of the decisions you've made, or if you've like killed NPCs that are killable and might be important for quests, you can't restart the game. Except now you can, because people complained about this.
Yeah.
And it's another thing they're backpedaling on. So basically, I think they've done some things here that were some of them were maybe risks from a kind of creative perspective, and they were trying to do interesting things. And you know, there's this the thing that bothers me the most is an example of that, where there is this in-game disease that the pawns can get.
Yeah.
And it can be brought into your world when you hire someone else's pawn, or yours can just contract it if they're fighting a dragon. And if you don't realize that any pawn in your party has this disease and you leave it too long, if you go to sleep in an inn, when you wake up in the morning, they have turned into a big demon dragon and killed every single person in town, including important NPCs. And that, I think, was done, you know, not for any kind of commercial or microtransaction related reason. I think that was just done to be like, oh, isn't this an interesting, new, unique thing? Mm. And the existence of these wake stones does allow you to bring back dead people. But, you know, then you are in microtransaction territory. If there's a bunch of dead characters in the world and you want to bring them back, maybe you're going to have to, you need to either go and grind or you need to start spending money. So some stuff is like, stuff, you know, they've gone for like an interesting concept and I think it's not worked. And then other stuff just feels like kind of a bit flippy you know, the microtransaction stuff, especially when they've said that basically fast travel is boring and no one should want to do it. And, you know,
if you want to do it, it's going to cost you £2.
Well, yeah, it's like you only need it in a game that's bad. So we don't have it in our game, except we do.
But we're going
to
charge
also,
you.
But also, except if you want to use it, we're going to charge you for
way
it.
Way worse.
Yeah.
So much worse.
It is.
Well, that's kind of the energy is like, it's just baffling as to why they've done this. Like, some full price games, yeah, they do have microtransactions, but normally they're like a cosmetic or an additional weapon that you can get that if you really, really like the game, you can spend money on it and it doesn't benefit you in any way other than looking cooler. But the fact that like they've stuffed fast travel and like resettable things and customization under another set of payments is absolutely insane thing to do, and I can't fathom somebody doing that, like setting that up as the process of what they're going to do, and no one in the room saying that's not going to go down well. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't do this, because as much as you want to make maybe an extra 20 quid off people in these microtransactions, everyone is going to think that you are a scumbag if you do that. And I think that unfortunately no one seemed to get their point across enough where they didn't do this, because this is all I've really heard about Dragon's Dogma 2. Other people said it's really good and I've seen people like enjoying it, but from most of the discourse has been about these microtransactions and the things that you can't do in Dragon's Dogma 2 and not about like all the cool things that you can do. Mm-hmm. So I think they've shot themselves in the foot a little bit with this, and I hope that people seeing the reaction that people have had to these microtransactions will stop anyone else doing something similar.
Yeah, to answer the question, I don't think this is necessarily the start of like loads of companies doing this. I would like to think that they will see how people are reacting to this and maybe think, okay, yeah, let's not do that. There are many ways you can add microtransactions to your game, as you said, Ashton, that are still going to make you money but not seem quite as bad as what has been done here. So hopefully, you know, if microtransactions have to continue, which I think they unfortunately do, they will at least be done in a different way. The difficult thing here as well is, like, normally something like being able to buy Rift Crystals, which is the in-game, not currency in the sense of gold pieces, but, you know, a separate currency. Mm. That might be the kind of thing that you would expect to be a microtransaction in a game. However, the whole USP of Dragon's Dogma is the pawn system, and you hire other people's pawns and make a little party. But to hire certain pawns costs Rift Crystals. So that, again, feels like...
Can you get Rift Crystals in-game?
Yeah, you do. You get them in-game. Like, you earn them. But I'm not earning them super quickly. I've not yet come into a situation where I don't have enough. And it may well be that I won't ever come into that situation. Mm. But I can't say that for sure. And again, it just feels a little bit like you're semi-paywalling your USP.
Yeah.
So again, I'm not really sure about if in this instance, even microtransactions for Rift Crystals works. So it's a shame.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. I don't know. I mean, I would be shocked and disappointed if the director who said the famous thing about fast travel was involved in the decision to add microtransactions, because it certainly seemed, whether you agree with him or not, and I think most people didn't, was that he had a very specific creative vision for this game.
Mm.
And regardless, putting aside to one side for a second how scummy it is that you're charging for these optional things.
Yeah.
It also, like, if people take you up on it, completely, like, not necessarily ruins, but like it destroys the creative path that you were trying to lay out.
Yeah.
Really struggled to find the words to put in front of each other there, like the Wallace and Gromit bit where he's putting the track down.
Yeah.
Like, my brain is like, what are the words that come after this one? I don't know what they are. Anyway.
Yeah, these things are finally balanced by developers when they're creating,
exactly.
Like, oh, we need to make sure there's only so many rifts.
And especially because he dug his heels in and made a really stupid point. It's like, this guy, you know, he knows what he wants this game to be. To offer these microtransactions is to completely undermine that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, why would you do that? So this has got to be a decision made by on a publisher level rather than a development level.
Yeah.
And that sucks. I feel sorry for them if that is the case, because it does make them look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And this game is by all accounts fantastic, and it will always have an asterisk next to it now.
Yeah.
Because of this silly decision. And you can earn the stuff in game, and that is true, and that so far has been their only defense, because they did apologize for some of the bugs and some of the issues that people had with it. But when it came to this stuff, the stuff people were really complaining about, they just said, well, you know, you can earn all that stuff in game, and then apparently they just stuck a link in for people to buy it, mm-hmm. buy the stuff. It's yeah. like you are. It's so tone deaf, and it is a shame because Capcom have been absolutely yeah. smashing it. This ultimately, unless you take them up on it, will not ruin your experience of the game because you will still be able to play through it as intended without this stuff. It is optional, mm-hmm. but it sucks that it's there, mm-hmm. and I think that's such a self-own that was yeah. unnecessary.
And for you know? Capcom as well, who've been doing so well recently. I mean, yeah. as it said there, Metacritic, you know, the highest rated video game company on Metacritic for 2023. And they've been mostly knocking out the park with their Resis over the past several years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to bring this out now is a real shame.
Yeah. I didn't think about how they've undermined themselves quite as much. But yeah, it's a good point. Like, even with the thing that you can only have one save and you can't rewrite it. If you're then going to be like, but if you pay £2, you can go back and like do it again. Yeah.
It's a bit like if Dark Souls said, oh, we'll lower the difficulty for a fiver. Yeah. It's like, well, hang on. A, surely in a lower difficulty Dark Souls defeats the entire point of Dark Souls. Yeah. And B, your whole thing is that it's hard.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
They have, as I said, you can now, or they're going to add the ability to restart the game.
That's good.
And that was never a microtransaction in the first place. It was just impossible to do. Until you get to the end, and there's like the option for either New Game Plus or New Game, but you have to roll credits on the game mm-hmm. to, at the moment, time of recording, to restart.
Sure, it's a phenomenal game right now, per the reviews, etc. But this is yet another case of maybe don't pre-order, maybe wait a few months, because come Christmas time, there will be a definitive version of this game where everything that is perceived to be wrong with it will be fixed.
It's such a shame how many games it feels like have come out recently, and despite being good games, have tarnished their own reputation with just like unsurmountable greed that's just being pumped out by all of the not all of them, but many of the publishers and higher ups just shafting their own great games by doing stuff like this.
Especially if they then react to it and go on to fix some of the issues later down the line, because then the ship sailed. You know, as we said, I think last week, Battlefront, no matter what they do now to fix their servers, which is the main issue, like, all right, there are a few actual bugs with the game, even offline, but the main problem is multiplayer. If they fix that, it's too late. Like, they've missed that first window of a couple of weeks where, if it had been really good, so many people would have been in there playing it night after night, you know, with their friends, enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. It can be too little too late, unfortunately, if you do fix these things down the line.
Absolutely. Well, let us know what you think about everything we discussed today. We'd be interested in your feedback. Thank you so much for listening / watching.
Hey, just be nice in the comments.
It's a big ask.
Please.
Be nice.
It's a big ask. Peter's going to tell you a couple of places you can find us right now.
You can find us on youtube.com and twitch.tv, both / Team Triple Jump. Our videos go out on YouTube and our live streams happen over on Twitch. And hey, if you've got Amazon Prime, you're paying for a whole bundle of things, including a Twitch sub. So if you redeem that against us at no extra cost, you will get all the benefits of being a Twitch sub without paying anything on top of what you're already paying for Amazon Prime.
We are on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram, on all of which we are at Team Triple Jump. And if you want to become a patron and support us, it's patreon.com/ Team Triple Jump.
TripleJump.mup is our website. That's where you can find links to everything that we do. And why not leave us a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms, and we'd really bloody appreciate it, I'll tell you. Yeah. It's time for our sponsor yet again, which is, of course, the combined efforts of Brill Cream, the Team GB Olympic Diving Team, and Hell Divers 2, or Arrowhead Studios, I should say. It's Gel Divers 2, coming soon to Hell Divers 2, where you jump off a structure into a schlorp of gel, and Tom Daly goes, 10. Great, that's great a 10. Job.
Does Tom then jump in or?
No.
No, because he's retired.
Because he doesn't go near diving boards anyway. No. He can't do it. Yeah. No. He'll like, it's like a demon going into church or something. Yeah, just like fizzle up.
So. At least if you did come out and didn't drown, your hair would look great.
You would. You'd get that wet look all day, all over you.
Forever.
Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you soon. Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.